Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady, and I really am crazy, for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, don, da, don, don, what's woo, don, da, don, don, and what gets flushed down the loo in a world so weird. A world so inverted, we are all somewhat disconcerted. And the levels of corruption exposed make us shiver from our snouts to our toes. Now they have all come to blows. We know the scammers, the pimps, and the hoes. And the hammer of justice will meet much resistance, but the light is focused, diligent, persistent. And where will we be this time next year? Happy, prosperous, and kicking back with a beer. Welcome back, martini heads. I raise my glass to you, figuratively and literally. I'm just gonna go ahead. And yes, I have had already a little drinky poo-poo. I'm gonna have another little sip of this drinky poo-poo just for you. To see basically if it's a winner or a sinner. Interesting combination. I think it'll grow on me. More about that towards the end of the show. It is rather strong, though. I do wonder if I got the measurements right on that one. Anyway, welcome back. Welcome back. I love you all. Mwah, mwah, mwah. If you are joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. We're very big on that, darlings. Metaphysical Martini is where the Holy Spirit meets top shelf distilled spirits, and what a wonderful combination that is. But that is not what we mean when we say, let the spirit inhabit the human. Here at Martini Central, and also at our satellite Olive locations, we take a practical, hands-on approach to all things spirit and woo-woo. We most certainly do not take what we regard to be a typical New Age approach to metaphysics, which has this habit of sort of sitting in clean little bubbles of unicorns and fairies, denying evil, denying its existence, and, you know, just denying that anybody even wants to talk about evil. Meanwhile, the trolls are declaring scorched earth, and they're trampling all over the planet with their dirty boots. No doubt those boots were funded by USAID. You know, we don't do any of that. We don't hide from the world. That's not what it means to let the spirit inhabit the human. Our approach to life, I would say, is really kind of stripped down and simple. We believe we are part of a greater cosmic experience. We believe we are manifestations of some type of cosmic intelligence. And we see our human lives as temporary, individualized manifestations of that supreme cosmic intelligence. What shall we call the greatness, the ever-evolving, eternal expansion of consciousness? I mean, just calling it God, it just sounds so silly, really, doesn't it? I mean, we see ourselves as cosmic space adventurers, eternal co-creators, and very much hands-on in the expansion of that godly consciousness. I mean, I wake up every morning and I sing, you know, "Start Trekking Across the Universe," because that's really how I feel. You know, we've had multiple lifetimes on multiple realms. And by now, we should be in the higher consciousness that allows us to live within our cumulative souls whilst having an individualized experience, to be able to see life as a buffet of intergalactic delicacies to be tasted, touched, and enjoyed, but, you know, only handling the ones that you think you want to handle. You're not going to go mad and stuff your face with everything on the table. You know, traditionally, this mysterious cosmic intelligence is referred to as God. Yes. But this God has so much baggage attached to it. And none of it serves any purpose other than to confuse, divide, and manipulate. And that's annoying and it's unfair. It's certainly unfair to God. Because this God, who is good, gets the blame for all the problems mankind creates in its name. And that causes rational people, people who see through the psychotic, deranged God of the Bible, it causes those people, free thinkers, to cast God aside in favor of logic, common sense, and rational mind. And to be honest, I would take that over religion any day, because without religion, one's own God positioning satellite will align with Creator. That's how we were created. Even having rejected the concept of Creator or anything remotely supernatural, the God connection kicks in, even if you don't believe in God. And do you know what that looks like? It looks like harmony and common sense. The God connection kicks in as common sense. People, I know many people, I'm a people person. Actually, I'm not. I'm kind of an introvert and a recluse, but I have learnt to do well with people over the years because I woke up one morning and decided there's about 8 billion of them out there, so I should do something constructive. But, you know, many of these people say they're atheists, and I believe them. But if they are honest and, you know, they converse with you for a while, it really is more that they reject the idiocy of creating so-called holy groups that insist on killing one another over disagreements in doctrine. So my atheist friends call themselves humanists, and that's lovely. I know all about humanism. I'm definitely a humanist. I just believe in God as well. But my humanist friends who don't believe in a superior supernatural, they are also capable of love, affection, inspiration, co-creation, expressions of joy and awe, you know, as well as anybody else on the planet. They're not missing anything. They experience and process the same emotions as the rest of us. So what difference does it make that they don't identify with one sect or cult or another? In my mind, as I look towards a new type of thinking to accommodate the fourth dimensional space that Earth is going to occupy soon, the difference is huge. And trigger warning, I suppose, for anybody who really is married to their religion, it's really, you know, just be aware, you might be triggered, and it's all on you, darlings. All I can do is put this stuff out. And it's just my opinion, you know. Religious beliefs can make rational people do irrational things. I refer often to the suicide vest community, which is exclusively religious. And then the people who created and distributed COVID bioweapon posing as a vaccine, they are all exclusively religious. Their religion is Luciferianism and money, lust, and greed. But you couldn't get any of my humanist friends to pull that shit. You know, but my religious friends, who get very hot under the collar just even discussing these things, I'm not so sure. You see, because God of the scriptures is presented as a psychotic weirdo with serious mental health issues, right? So given that, why wouldn't his followers emulate him, even if they didn't realize that that was the part of him that they're emulating? I mean, the biblical God has very serious ego issues. Mankind has serious ego issues. The illusion of a false above has created a false below. Now, people get their panties in a twist with me over this sort of stuff. Oh, we can't live without religion. Well, maybe you can't live without religion. And it is a free country, especially now that Trump is back. Have your religion. Be a spaghetti monster worshiper for all you want. I am just simply stating that I think that religion in 2025 is immature. And if you really sit down and think about the fact that we're all worshiping the same God and killing each other or allowing other people to manipulate our emotions so that they use that as an excuse so that we can kill each other, okay? If you really sit down and think about that, tell me what religion has done for the world that's good. That couldn't have been done without religion. You don't need religion to have a moral code. That's all I'm saying. And the world is changing, and the social philosophy of the future will be more along the lines of humanism, but with an understanding of that mysticism, that supernatural, the fact that there is some sort of creation process out there that we are all a part of. I would say the difference between me, I identify now. I don't want to use that term, but I just did. I would say that I'm a spirit-centered humanist. And if you know what spirit-centered means, and if you know what humanist means, put those together, and that's exactly what it is. I want to be a rational human being who owns my mind, but have my human experience guided by the allness of what I consider to be divine and wonderful. And I think that's the way we are going forward, because there's nothing in there for the ego to mess with. It can't say a Christian is this, a Muslim is this, a Jew is this, a Khazarian Jew is this, a Hindu is this, and whatever is whatever. It's just a personal relationship with divinity and a rational mind. That's co-creation. And life begins when the ego programming is dissolved. That's where I'm going with this. Have I pontificated enough for one show? Perhaps, perhaps. Okay, what are we doing today? Well, are we going to do quack? Yes, we are, but not for a while. Today's show is titled World of Earthcraft. And it is dedicated to all the young men I have counseled over the years and the many games of World of Warcraft we have played together over the years. And some of you are married now, and I love that a few of you keep in touch with me and send me photos of your family. I'll just explain why this obsession, I mean, I won't say I have an obsession with it. I just have learned to enjoy this game, World of Warcraft, and that's why this title is World of Earthcraft. I've enjoyed playing this game over the years because of all the people I met. And I first started playing it because I had some young men who were, I would say, quite damaged and wanted to meet me and wanted to have help. But they asked their parents if they could meet me inside the game so that they could hide behind their avatar. And I thought, well, this is fun. I love all this stuff, so I'll do that. And that's how I started playing World of Warcraft about 15 years ago. I think it was about 15 years ago, something along those lines. And what brought all this up is there was one young man in particular who is now an NCO in the US military, in the Air Force, actually. And he's married now with two fine young sons and a lovely wife. And when we first met, he was 15, 16, and he was having a very rough time. And so much so that he was actually the first one who said that he would only consent to meet me inside the World of Warcraft game as his toon. A toon is an avatar, the character you choose to play. So his parents were just, at that point, quite desperate to have somebody talk to him that he thought he could relate to. And he could relate to a fellow gamer, even though I was much, much older than him. And we would meet in a tavern in the capital city of Stormwind, which is the capital city of the realm of Azeroth, which is the realm of World of Warcraft. I think he was 15, 16 years old there. But we met in a tavern because his avatar could order and drink as many beers as it could handle, which a 15-year-old boy can't do IRL. And we did that for about a year, actually, until he was comfortable enough to meet me in person. And again, the reason I tell this story, for which I have permission to share, as long as I don't mention his name, it's because during one of our conversations in the game, when we were talking about some really supernatural stuff, some out there woo-woo stuff, I was explaining to him my version of the Big Bang, my version of string theory, how the universes were formed. And his response was, I'm going to paraphrase, this was a long time ago. His response was along the lines of, well, this game is like that, isn't it, honey? He says, think about it. He says, someone, something out there created these realms. And they probably started out as stick man drawings and simple landscapes and plot markers for the storyline. And then one day, an unseen hand, the divine code writer in the sky, took its ideas and animated them, and boom, it invited any souls who thought they could survive there to make a life for themselves and go on endless adventures to expand the realms, perhaps to discover and colonize new realms. This is just like living on planet Earth, he said, which is very clever. And so I asked them, okay, well, they created these realms, and who populates these realms, and what is the attraction of these realms inside this computer game? And his response was along the lines of, well, we do. The same people that occupy this so-called realm occupy the real realm. Anyone who can handle it can enter the realm. And the attraction is the multiple classes of avatar you can pick from. You can pick something you relate to or something you feel you could never achieve in real life. Either way, it's fun. So I asked him, is there any danger in losing presence of mind playing this game? I mean, can a person, any person, live in both realms, in Azeroth and on Earth, and be happy and be present? My concern was, wouldn't we lose focus if we find that this other virtual world is so much more exciting than ours? And perhaps also it doesn't really have the same consequences. You can be reincarnated in this game 100 times a day. You can only be reincarnated here once every lifetime. So I asked him, can a person live in both realms and be happy, present, and functional? And his response was, well, what do you think we're doing now? We're living in both realms. He goes, I don't know what makes you happy. Happiness comes and goes. But he says, there's no reason why one should detract from the other. He said, my parents are paying you money in the real world. And in return, you are coming to Azeroth, our alternate world, and buying me beer, which I'm too young to drink in the real world, and giving me advice on how not to be sent to a military academy or a nature retreat for belligerent teens. Have we lost focus? No. I had cottoned on quite early that this was rather an exceptional young man, to be honest. And I asked him, well, what can a person learn from their choices in Warcraft? In particular, what can they learn about themselves that would help them IRL? IRL means in real life. Now, I'm 65, so I had to learn all this stuff. So if I come across these initials, I'm going to explain them to you. I'm assuming that you're not all 18-year-old gamers. So I said, you know, why do you play the game? How does a person learn from the choices that you play in the game? What can they learn about themselves? What do you learn about yourself that could help you in the real world? Or is it simply pure escapism and entertainment, which I believe is useful and has a place in everyone's life? And his response was, when I first got this tune, this avatar, I really thought it was me. He said, I chose the warrior class, and I chose the human as my race. And I asked him why. I said, you can be anything. You're already human. Why would you do that? And he goes, because I'm already human. So it's familiar. And that gives me a tactical advantage. He said, I liked the idea of being a tank. And the tank is the first one in and over the wall. The biggest guy, the best armored guy, the guy with the biggest machete, the biggest sword, whatever. He's the big guy who knocks the door down, takes all the aggro, which means he takes the most powerful bosses in the mob and fights them so that the other players can go around and sort of snipe at the add-ons and do some major healing and pick at the loot. So the tank is like the big vice cop that gets out of the car, goes into the bar and just says, okay, you're all going down to the station, you know? And he reckoned he played it really well. And he enjoyed it for about 3 months. And then he thought, if this was IRL in real life, every limb in my body would be broken after each fight. And no way could I recover in time to make the dungeons and raids on Tuesday nights. So he said, I thought to myself, this is just make-believe. And of course, I know it's make-believe, but I want more than entertainment. He says, today we do nothing that is challenging. They give me nothing challenging, not at home, not at school. I want to find my inner hero. And I want him to help me find my way in life. I don't want to go the direction my parents want me to go. So he decided to play every character in turn to see which one was the best fit. And he did stick to the human race for the most part. You know, you can be a gnome, you can be a dwarf, you can be an elf. You can be a Gilnean, which turns into a werewolf because they were cursed. You can be a goblin. I mean, you can be all sorts of interesting things in this game. It was interesting to me. I learned a lot, actually, observing his growth during this time. As he worked his way through the classes like, you know, warrior, rogue, you know, all the avatars, he would sit and discuss his spiritual growth with me. What he liked about the tune, what he disliked, what it taught him. So after the warrior, he went on to the paladin class. And a paladin is a sort of a holy warrior who can deal significant damage, but has the bonus ability to heal. And that's a very useful chap around, you know, to have around, especially if your team healer dies or gets disconnected, which happens. So he liked the paladin class. He loved the idea of fighting against the shadow and bringing holy light into the world. He loved the auras or the shields that he could create around himself and others. And, you know, we had studied meditation together. And I would say he still is a very deeply spiritual man, and he felt so righteous and morally sound when playing a paladin. But he also said he got a glimpse of how religious fervor could mess with one's mind. And after playing for a while and thoroughly enjoying it, his verdict on paladins as his main character was, very useful to have on a team, but it's too wishy-washy for me. I can deal damage or I can heal, and sometimes I can protect, but I can't do them all at once and I lose focus with this character. So he's found out quite a lot about himself. As the warrior, he was like, why am I tanking and bashing myself up and everybody else is getting off scot-free? Perhaps I can put my talents to better use. So he mixes it up a bit with the paladin who has other skills, and he thinks, but I'm losing my focus here. So after having experienced the thuggery of the warrior, that experience is archived within him. He went on to experience the more balanced approach of the paladin, and now that experience is archived within him. Learning, growing as we go along. He then went on to play a hunter, which is a lone marksman, really, with a bow or a crossbow or a shotgun. But usually they have a fighting pet to tank for them, which is highly recommended because hunters are not very strong at one-on-one combat. I mean, they would last 3 seconds in the arena against a warrior. So he said he enjoyed playing it because it was quick and easy to level up and a good vibe for solo adventuring. And he would find himself looking for a quiet spot by the river, you know, in Azeroth, where he would catch fish and cook it and eat it and simply contemplate whatever his mind threw at him. And he did a lot of that, and he would contemplate things that were bothering him in the real world, of course, when he was there with his little pet by the river catching fish in this computer game. But as time went on, he found that there was prejudice against hunters in Azeroth, and not many people invited him to join their raids. So he kept the tune, but used it for hunting and leatherwork. And once it reached max level, not so much for fighting, you know? So he feels this character, the lone hunter, helped him to still his mind. Because there he was, you know, surrounded by dozens of lucrative quests and side quests. Yet with the hunter, he took time out to sit and catch fish. The hunter taught him to be closer to nature and to take only what you need and never to fall prey to greed. And so the hunter and all of its pros and cons are now archived inside his experience. Now, after the hunter, he wanted something a little bit more exciting. He went on to play a mage. Oh, I do love the mage. And he loved it. He said it's tough in the beginning when you're leveling up, as it is with all magic classes, by the way. But once you get your mojo going, mages can unleash a massive amount of damage, creating shards of killer icicles or giant balls of fire. And mages can deal damage to large groups and huge areas. So yes, he liked that. And also he liked being able to create portals, teleport to any major city on any of the realms. And it was a very popular choice. Actually, mages are a very popular choice in the game. But I asked him what it taught him if this was IRL. How would it help him? And his response was along the lines of, if you have almost unlimited power at your disposal, you had better show up as the best version of yourself. If I was a mage IRL, he said, it would teach me how to use that power responsibly. So I asked, is there a chance you would use that power for personal vendetta reasons? And he replied, quite honestly and quite rightly, since I cannot predict the future, I have to say yes. There is always a chance I might do that. That's why it is good to sort this out now and not be put on the spot later in life. He said, you never know, Ani, I might be president one day, and I don't want to sit there staring at that red button, wondering what the heck to do. So the mage taught him power comes with responsibility. And then that experience was archived. How wonderful. After the mage, he kept playing. He played a rogue. A rogue. Ha ha. It sounds kind of devilish, doesn't it, and romantic, but rogues are not a very popular class. And probably because they are quite roguish. They creep up behind you and stab you with daggers dipped in poison. He actually hated playing this one. He said it smacked of secret societies and undercover dark ops, things he considered dishonorable and beneath him. And he quickly moved on to try out the druid. I thought he might enjoy that one, but he did not care for that class either. He said druids were overly cautious of others, and he thought them far too naive in the ways of others. And there was something about the shape-shifting aspect of it. He said, as much as I like nature, I don't want to be a literal part of it. So he somehow gained a new respect for his human body through this druid experience. He had conversations with me along the lines of, why should I have to transform to become stronger? Why can't I be that in my original body? And I know he played other characters too, and I don't remember what was discussed too much because honestly, this was years ago. But darlings, I thought you might find that story of value because clearly we're not providing enough excitement or challenge in the real world, and our young people are jaded and bored. And that in itself is interesting to me because, good Lord, we are eternal souls created in the soul forges of source energy. We're hurtling through space and time, and we're having individualized experiences in physical bodies on various planets. And somehow we have created ennui. How is this possible? How is it we cannot see the original game we signed up for, namely our current incarnation, World of Earthcraft, as the most exciting game on the planet? I might have some ideas, but I need a drink first. Hold on. Wow, that packs a punch. One has to ask, why has life become such a grind? Pay bills and die. Run up credit cards and die. Fall out with your family and die. Pay tax and die. Da-da-da and die. What happened to the joy, to the frivolity, to the silliness? What happened to going to bed every night, sleeping well, and looking forward to the following morning? It's as though we live in one big building and we just shuffle from room to room. The house room, the work room, the supermarket room, the gym room, back to the house room, to sit in the living room within the house room and listen to the mysterious voices emanating from a flat, shiny surface. If we're honest, I think we've all been depressed for so long now. We may have forgotten what genuine joy feels like. That feeling when every cell in your body tingles with vital life force. Perhaps we should see ourselves as mages, as druids, as paladins, as warlocks or hunters or warriors. It might empower us and knock us out of our slumber. What do you think, peeps? I declare today, February the 2nd, 2025 CE, Chaos Era, National Be Your Own Superhero Day. The world needs your light, mankind. Do not hide. Your being small serves only the darkness. And we don't serve the darkness at Cosmic Ani's Intergalactic Bar and Grill. Open 24/7 with the coldest beer and the cleanest restrooms in this quadrant of the universe. You see, darlings, all those superpowers, those avatars, you know, all the powers they have, we can have them too. And we already have them, actually, but we don't believe it, so it doesn't register. We are experiencing as humans, yes, in human bodies, yes, and those can be quite fragile, yes. But if the human operating system is run by the spirit, we could probably make those World of Warcraft mages look like amateurs. And we would do so using our immense power to deter conflict and teach people peace. Let me explain. Back in the day, when I had the stamina for middle and late teen males, WoW was more popular with that demographic than it is today. And WoW was a very useful point of shared reference for many of my younger clients. Mages, warriors, hunters, etc. Those are useful tools when dealing with young minds and character development. I had many conversations along the lines of, so young Jimmy, what's your favorite tune? Oh, my favorite tune is the Frost Mage. Oh, how very chill. Why do you like to play it? Oh, it does a massive amount of damage. Ah, I see, Jimmy. So you can kill more than one person at a time. Oh, yes, I can. I can kill lots. It's called A of E, Area of Effect. I can freeze a whole group of people and shatter them. Ah, in the shattering, they all die. Well, yes, Arnie, that's the point. To kill the enemy as quickly as possible. I see. Ah, Jimmy, it must take a lot of practice to learn those spells. And you must need a great deal of experience points to fuel those massive A of E spells. Oh, yes, Arnie, It's a grind to get there, but once you get there, you are really powerful and you can really make a difference. I see. So, Jimmy, with all this experience you've gained, you must be channeling some powerful energies. Can those energies be used for something other than destruction? I mean, can they be used to make peace instead of war? Could we go to arbitration instead of assault? Ani? Yes, Jimmy? How would I stop the enemies from attacking my soldiers? You could rework the spells you use. Instead of unleashing all that power as giant shards of ice, cutting people to ribbons, could the power behind the spell be used to deter the enemy from attacking you? I don't understand, says Jimmy. Can you give me an example? Okay, how about this? Instead of using an area of effect spell to freeze and kill, how about creating a spell that sends a pale pink cloud over the heads of the enemy, and when they inhale the cloud vapor, it smells like peppermint, and they see the insanity of war, and they turn around and go home, leading the diplomats to sort things out. Ah, says Jimmy, I see what you're saying, Ani, but if I did that, the game would be over. There would be peace. Jimmy, darling, you say that. You say that like it's a bad thing, but hear me. Would the game really be over? Or just part of the game where people run around hating and killing each other? You see, that's not a game. That's called perpetual warfare. And that's not supposed to happen in a sane world. Think about it. If you had the Frost Mage powers IRL, would you really use them? Would you freeze people? Cause them great pain and ultimately shatter them, killing them? Only if they deserved it, says Jimmy. Okay, but Jimmy, love, who gets to judge? And what if you're wrong? What if you kill someone and they were innocent, and now what are you? You're a cold-blooded killer who didn't do his homework, and you're going to spend the rest of your life in a cage wearing bright orange overalls, trying to hide from Billy the Bugger and his Rearview Appreciation Society. And that, my man, is not a life goal for adulthood. So let's get sensible here, Jimmy. You are a powerful mage IRL, in real life. Your mission is to end perpetual warfare, raise human consciousness, and lead mankind into a new golden age. What type of spells do we write to make that happen as quickly as possible? What stands in man's way to ascension into higher form? We want to write a code to dispel that curse from the collective psyche. Forget Azeroth. I'm putting you in charge of planet Earth. Oh, what curse is this? What curse is it? It's the curse of the alter ego, Jimmy. The illusion of separation from one person from another. The illusion of separation that we're outside of God, or we're all outside of each other somehow. Because once war is over, Jimmy, the real story of co-creation begins. Once the war is over and the unholy din of murder fades away, we enjoy the silence of perfect alignment with all that is. And through the silence, new ideas emerge, new voices are heard, and new friendships are forged. And what was once a story of never-ending war is now an exciting tale of mankind's ascension from tragic to magic. So, little Jimmy, let's get busy planning the next chapter of this game, World of Earthcraft, 10,000 years of peace and prosperity. This is how I dealt with my young men. Use this game to teach you all about yourself. What are your weaknesses? What are your strengths? And then leave the game and join this game, World of Earthcraft, and take all of those superpowers with you to create a peaceful, harmonious world. Thank you, everyone, for letting me walk down memory lane with you. And thank you to my anonymous old friend for letting me share some of your story, darling, your spiritual journey through playing the many characters in World of Warcraft. I know everyone is very proud of you and how you turned out your life, turned your life around, and you found the courage to go out and look for it, and look at you now, a husband, a father, a proud member of the US Air Force, and still playing Warcraft, and no doubt patiently waiting for the day your boys are old enough to join you and to serve the Alliance in Azeroth. King's honor to you, my friend. And a shout out, I think, to my guild back in Azeroth, the Defiant Ones, playing on Airy Peak. A lovelier bunch of people and lunatics with a greater sense of humor you could never hope to meet. If you play World of Warcraft, my toon's name is Red Pill. Of course it's Red Pill. I'm a marksman hunter. I'm not very good, but I have a lot of fun. And I'm on Airy Peak. And yes, my work has taken me to some very strange places. And now, my darlings, thanks to Joanna, my friend in Albany, for replacing my broken kazoo. And this is a much nicer kazoo than the one I had. This one will not break. Let us shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, shaky. We are moving on to Quack questions, answers, and comments. If you would like to share the contents of your magnificent minds with martini heads across the known universe, send your emails to me, Ani@aniabadissian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon, 97070, USA. And please let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Omit Personal Details or Paddington Bear's Third Cousin. Oh, this dreadful drink is growing on me now. So shaking it up, and let's pick something. This one is from Lena, L-E-N-A, and she would like to know the following. Dear Ani, if you could have $100 million cash, no tax, to spend as you please, the only condition would be that you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, would you do it? One food? I mean, one food group? You mean I would have to pick one food item and eat the same thing every day for the rest of my life, and then I would get $100 million? I don't think I could do it. I mean, if I picked an apple, I could only eat apples forever until I dropped dead from apple disease. I don't think I could do it. I mean, the best thing about having money for me is the ability to travel the world and experience new cultures, and food is a great part of that. Imagine going to Milan and not being able to experience a classic risotto, or going to Texas and not trying the barbecue brisket, or London, my hometown, and not tucking into a giant portion of fish and chips, or pie and mash with parsley sauce and chili oil, and France with her patisserie culture. Now, I should probably give this a bit more thought. $100 million, it's a lot of money. And I'm sure some of you are saying, WTF, Ani, $100 million is a lot of money. Think of all the good you could do with that money. Just pick a food you like well enough that can sustain you and go for it. And now I'm in a quandary, because you are correct. $100 million, I could get a lot done with that. So what are my favorite food groups? Because, you know, you all know I've lost a lot of weight recently. I am living the Make America Healthy Again dream, 56 pounds and counting. My favorite food groups actually are bread, beef, smoked salmon, and cocktails. And as much as I would like to, I cannot live on cocktails. I believe it would go the other way and shorten my lifespan. Bread, my favorite food in the world, I'm currently severely sensitive to. So that's out, and that leaves beef or smoked salmon. And it would have to be beef, because it has more variety. And would I be happy with my choice? I have no idea. If anyone out there has $100 million lying around and would help me test this theory, get in touch. Lena, thank you for the question. And you have given me something to think about. I think the answer is no. I mean, You can't just live on one food group. Your gut biome would collapse, I think. I don't know. And that already happened to me last year. Thank you very much. We're not going there again. Let's take another question. This is from Jules, who lives somewhere, I'm sure, but hasn't told me. And she says, dear Ani, what will happen once all the corruption has been exposed? Will the administration arrest and try and sentence the rapists, the pedos, and the money launderers? Well, Jules, I certainly hope so. I don't think they'll get a slap on the wrist and retirement with a full pension. But I don't know exactly what is planned for these misguided perverts lost to the religion of greed, lust, and power. Arresting them is, of course, the correct course of action. Trying them for their crimes to the full extent of current law, which includes execution for treason and crimes against humanity, that would be a good idea. Some will be in civil court. Others, I think, will have to go military tribunal. I do know we can't allow them to just fade away, because as long as they live, they have influence and can be influenced. We have to accept that the level of evil unleashed by these sick bastards warrants execution, after which their bodies need to be cremated into dust and cleansed with ritual before being pulverized into nothingness. I hope the white hats have that in order. I'm sure they do. But I guess we will wait and see, Jules. But I believe quite a few of the major players, or quite a few of the once major players, have already been replaced with doubles, and that was done a while ago. And it would be easy to make a show of rounding up the doubles, putting them on trial in Gitmo, and then disposing of them in whatever way is most expedient, which may not really go very well for the doubles. I have spent my time, my fair share in dark ops back in the day, and it doesn't always go well for the doubles. That's all I'm saying. Fun times ahead, my darlings. Let me have a sip of this excellent drinky poo, and thank you, Jules, and move on to the next missive here. This is a postcard. I do love getting those. And this is from Ronnie. Ronnie is vacationing in Reno, you know, the other Las Vegas. And Ronnie writes, what happened to Matt Gaetz? What happened to Matt Gaetz? What happened to Matt Gaetz? Pretty little Matt Gaetz. Well, I do remember he issued his resignation from Congress. Was it November 13th, the same day President-elect Donald Trump nominated him to become his attorney general? But then he withdrew, and he didn't cite a specific reason for the withdrawal, but over the next week, there was some sort of controversy. Allegations of sex trafficking minors, or that he had paid somebody who was underage for sex. I don't know. But the Justice Department, which Gaetz would have led if he were Attorney General, investigated allegations that Gaetz committed statutory rape by paying for this sex with a 17-year-old, blah, 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 across state lines. But the investigation was dropped without charges. And I think all credit to Gaetz. I mean, you know, maybe he was told to, but I think it probably came from him. He thought this would be a distraction from the good work Team Trump America has planned. So he withdrew his name from the hat for Attorney General. Mark Gaetz is not unemployed. He has taken on a role as a host for a conservative news network. And someone said he's considering a position at a law firm. Is Trump the only one with no sex skeletons in his closet? I mean, guilty or not, Gaetz did the right thing by removing himself from anything that could impede Trump's agenda for a sovereign America. That's about as much as I know, and I got that from the news channel. So there we are. I don't have any scoop on him. Here's an email from, excuse me. This email is from Stan the Man in Manchester, UK. And he says, hello, Ani, I like you. And like you, I am a Manchester United supporter. Huzzah. We are almost the same age. I have a few years on you. You probably remember Georgie Best, do I ever, Nobby Styles, yep. Alex Stepney, best goalkeeper ever. Jimmy Rimmer, almost the best goalkeeper ever. And the rest of all those good old bad boys. I miss the days when the football team represented your hometown. It's all big business now, and foreign players with mousse in their hair and manicured nails are playing. I can't say I like it much. He says, we've gone from real men to a bunch of poofy boys, noncing about on the grass, focused only on scoring goals and doing television commercials for aftershave and antiperspirant. Back in my day, men weren't afraid of a bit of sweat and dirt. I thought it would cheer you up, honey, if I sent you my mum's recipe for Eccles cakes. You have mentioned how much you like them on a few of your podcasts. This recipe is a winner. Enjoy with a nice cup of PG Tips, which I know is your favorite tea. Yes, it is. Thank you, Stan the man. I love Eccles cakes. I love them. And I do on occasion order a pack of the real Lancashire Eccles cakes. Those are the best in all the macro world. But your mum's recipe is easy, so I'm going to follow that, Stan, and I'll make up a batch for Easter. I love Eccles cakes so much. I even wrote a poem about them quite a few years ago. Let me see if I can remember it. And it's supposed to be read with a Lancashire accent, but I'm not going to insult the north of England by attempting one of those. So my poem on Eccles cakes. Oh, divine concoction, bathed in good butter, those who dislike thee belong in the gutter. Thou art so fluffy, thou art so flaky, filled with sweet raisins, and then we bake thee. A cup of strong tea and an Eccles for eating, nothing tastes better and is well worth repeating. And if the real Lancashire Eccles Cake Company in Lancashire would like to use that poem for their television commercials, please do contact me at Arnie@arnieavedisian.com. I probably won't want any money for it, but I'll want boxes and boxes and boxes of Eccles Cake. Darlings, the secret to Eccles Cakes is in the buttery, soft, flaky pastry mixed with those luscious Greek raisins. You see, those are the ones that they use at the real Lancashire Eccles Cake Company, the Greek ones. And then you warm it up for just a few seconds to activate the little sugary bit on top, and you have a tasty treat and the pride of Lancashire, United Kingdom. I will definitely try your mum's recipe, Stan the man. Don't worry about those poofy boys with their moussey hair and their manicured nails. I think you'll find everybody's going to enjoy going back to their own country within the next few years. And this is the next and last email from our quack bowl, and it's from Erica, which is a pseudonym. Erica was born in Dublin, and that's where she lives, but she has lived in New York for 3 years now, and she says she hates it, but she signed a 5-year contract with her company, so she has to suffer through 2 more years, or the payoff will not be financially worth it. She's homesick, and she fell into a bout of depression recently, and she writes how much she misses her family, her friends, her Dublin routine, and a gentler pace of life. The point she makes is this, and I'm paraphrasing because it's a very long email. When I left Ireland for this position, I was witnessing the planned destruction of my country. Now in New York, I am watching the planned destruction of America unfold in front of my very eyes, and can only give thanks that Trump came in when he did. If your country has problems, there's an idea. Stay there and fix it there. Don't go to someone else's country with your problems and shit attitude of entitlement and arrogance. Mark my words, there will be blood, and rightly so. Erica, take heart, because you will now witness the reversal of all Luciferian inversion. You will see it take place day by day, and you will feel mankind's shift from arsehole to my mind is under control. You know, there's an Irish song I learned to love over the years. It's a song of exile. And, you know, being of Armenian race ancestry, I too was raised with songs of exile, languid, melancholic dirges of deep longing, loss and trepidation for the future. But I don't feel that way. I'm an American. I have nothing but hope and excitement for our future. Erica, if I may I offer you just a couple of verses of that song? And, you know, it's something Irish and quite precious. Just to remind you that you'll be home soon. And this is my version of a Stourma Cree, treasure of my heart. And just to warn you, I'm no more O'Connell and I have the flu, but I'm going to do my best because I feel your pain. Just a couple of verses for you. And you can all pray now that I can hit the high notes. Astor Makri, when you're far away from the house that you'll soon be leaving. Sure, it's many a time, by night and by day, that your heart will be sorely grieving. For the stranger's land may be bright and fair, and rich in all treasures golden. You will pine, I know, for the long, long ago, and the heart that is never olden. Astor Makri, when the evening's mist in the mountain and meadow is falling, or turn Astor from the throng and list, and maybe you will hear me calling. For the sound of a voice that you seldom hear, for somebody speedy returning. Arun, Arun, oh, won't you come back soon to the one who will always love you. Erica, my darling, you will be home soon. America is an interesting experiment. I wonder if we will ever stop saying I'm Greek-American, or I'm Irish-American, or I'm Italian-American. Why did anyone think America needed a diversity thing, an equality thing? America is the most diverse effing country on the planet. And we were all getting along, making it work, figuring it out. Black, white, pink, whatever, gay, straight, dog lovers, cat lovers. You know, things were beginning to go so well that the establishment just had to come along and smash it all down. Darlings, we've done it again. We've come to the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do. Today's real life cocktail, wait for it, something from the fans of World of Warcraft. It's called the Maldraxxus cocktail, and Maldraxxus is one of the weirder realms in the game. It is icky and smelly and not my vibe, but this drink, while not exactly a favorite of mine, would make time spent in Maldraxxus bearable. And here's how you make it. You need 2 ounces of mezcal, 1 ounce of freshly squeezed orange juice, 1/2 ounce of absinthe, no more, a dash of the old Angostura bitters, and you need some sage to burn. Take your glass, a lowball glass, flame the sage, and then smother it with the inverted lowball glass so it gets smoky. Then you take the remaining ingredients, mezcal, orange juice, absinthe, dash of bitters, put them in a cocktail shaker with cracked ice, shaky, shaky, strain, and then serve it in the smoked glass. You can serve it on the rocks, you can serve it up. I like to try them up first to see how the flavors blend without too much dilution. But remember, folks, experiment, experiment, and it's all very good, but cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. Darlings, I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Smoochie woochie to you. And a shout out to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, your one-stop shop for all things metaphysics, mysticalwares.com. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. In fact, I am standing and ovating right now. Until we meet again, rise above the Dog and Pony Show. We are heading for a higher dimension, and that can only happen if we let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to the Metaphysical Martini with Ani Apodisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.